House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. We're starting a little bit late. It's 3:35 on March 29th. With us are Representative Lynn, Representative Holmes, Representative Newman, Representative T. Wilson, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a forum to conduct business. I ask you to please turn off your cell phones or Blackberries. First item on today's agenda is House Bill 202, Residential Sprinkler Systems. And looks like I've got Representative Bob Heron and Rob Earl from Representative Heron's office. Would both of you like to pull up chairs? Or
we'll just
or do try we, to we get the big gun.
Yeah, we'll just try with me first.
Now, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Heron, sponsor of Senate Bill, House Bill 202. Sir, this legislation allows an expansion of the public process in a local government entity to have people decide in their community whether they want sprinklers in single family and family homes. And again, it's an elongated process. They have to have three public hearings, not less than 60 days and not more than 180 days. Again, it's a mandate for a longer public process that protects the residents of the state. Entertain questions.
It's my understanding we started out with just about everybody hating this bill. And we're down to now where just about everybody, to the best of my knowledge, can live with it. Nobody likes it, which, you know, to me is a sign of a pretty good bill. But first question is from T. Wilson.
Okay, I noticed that this has to do with just one and two family. What happens to three family and above? Do they have sprinkler laws?
Yeah, that's under the state fire marshal.
Follow up, sir?
Certainly.
And are they required to have sprinklers in those?
It's a decision by the state fire marshal depending on the application. For when they go to build that, it's an issue that's between the state fire marshal and the builder.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Holmes, did you have a question?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm good for the moment.
Well, you got off light. No, you didn't. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I need some help with this one, Bob, because I'm still one of the guys who just can't get onto, I guess, the state mandating what you can or can do to your own home. And I get the fact that it may help reduce fires in your home. You know, I think it would be a good situation if you had to. But where I live, I could have a sprinkler in my home. But the first thing that you probably need to do in case of a fire a lot of times is turn the electricity off, and so my pump wouldn't work. Or and also with this, if you do a remodel, and now in the Mat-Su or in a lot of different communities, if you do a remodel, you have to get a permit. So if you get a permit and if you're remodeling your kitchen, are you going to have to go back and put fire sprinklers in your home?
Through the chair to the vice chair, it is truly a local decision about whether that sprinkler system should go into any home. What the intent of this legislation is, as currently written, is that it provides for a longer public process. In most communities, if not all, the municipality can have hearings. And some would say that a municipality, you know, your friends and neighbors that run the community could have what some would see as an accelerated process to mandate sprinkler systems. All this does is extends that public process from between 60, no less than 60, to no more than 180 days. And so in working with all the stakeholders in this was a reasonable compromise that everybody could accept, because it's hard for the opponents of the original bill, which was, you know, it was pretty drastic, is that they are not opposed to more public process. The more your constituents can be involved in a decision of this magnitude is good for them.
Couple follow-ups. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herron. So, Bob, do municipalities already have the ability to require sprinkler systems in homes?
It depends if they have adopted the appropriate codes, both international, national, et cetera. And if that is a decision that, for example, the fire chiefs takes their community through with the borough assembly or the council assembly as the deciding body based upon the input from their constituents, yes, they can do that. But what this law does is, this proposed legislation does, is to extend the public hearing process to a maximum of 180 days.
Before the follow-up, we've been joined by Representative Chenault, and we have one person in another committee, so I think best we can do six out of seven. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, Bob, because this is talks about municipalities, there's a large areas of our state that are that are not boroughs. So what about people who live in unorganized areas of the state? Does this affect them also?
Through the chair to the vice chair, yes, it would allow for a public process, say, in the community of Bethel, because we're a second-class city, and it would allow for that opportunity if the body chose to do that. Currently, it's unlikely in my community because the fire chief, George Young, feels that based upon availability of infrastructure that he's satisfied that state fire marshal in triplex and above, fourplexes and above, et cetera, is that's the appropriating authority to mandate those. But in other areas, the local assembly, local council, working with their fire chiefs could do that, yes. Unlikely, though.
Before the follow-up, I guess I'll eat my words. We've been joined by Representative Book, so we do have a full committee. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your wonderful leadership in this community that we all enjoy being here so much.
Bob, I thought it was the entertainment value, but
Bob, I guess what my question, my prior question led to unorganized areas of the state, so I'm assuming probably I believe Glen Allen is not in an organized area of the state. I mean, they've got some services there, but so maybe not a good area. Lyme Village, you know, or if you lived along the Yukon River somewhere where that was an unorganized areas of the state, and you wanted to build a home there, would you be, how do you satisfy requirements of having public comment periods and such like that? But yet we've got, because this becomes state requirement, how do you deal with that issue?
I look forward to through the chair, to the vice chair. I look forward to those days because the assembly for the unorganized areas of the state is the Alaska legislature. So, so I look forward to those days of making those decisions. And I'm not trying to make light of that, sir. That's, you know, and that's, we're the assembly for those areas.
Well,
yeah, again, Bob, I think that we should organize areas of the state or try and make, certainly you and I have worked on this to try and make opportunities like gas pipelines in the community so that they have the ability for economics and create boroughs. But there's some areas of the state, because if this would become a state requirement, then it would affect everybody in the state. But if you're in unorganized areas of the state that don't have community councils and places to do a lot of the things that are required in here that you have to do because they're not, municipalities are not organized, how does it affect them?
Again,
or how do you enforce it?
Through the chair, it becomes the legislature's responsibility.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'm really just trying to figure out why we need this bill, because if it's, because we're only talking about giving them a longer time they have to have a public hearing, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And this is one of my pet peeves. Then why don't we do it for many other things that don't get, you know, for other building codes and other zoning changes, and why only just sprinklers?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, is that there is, of course, we consider ourselves an independent state, independent thinking people, is there is a lot of discussion at the national level, and it's being done in several places where there are mandates for single and two-family residences where they has been mandated. And so people that oppose the original iteration of this bill, basically a mandate, they've pushed back and they said that, you know, we're not prepared for sprinklers to be mandated in single-family homes. And so the outcome, the compromise, is that home builders, fire chiefs, and others have been talking about this for several years, and so this is essentially an end compromise that we put something on the table that it takes your constituents, your friends and neighbors, that will decide locally if they want to mandate on themselves a sprinkler system. And so this allows for essentially a 120-day window between 60 and 180 to make that decision locally. That's all that the legislation is doing for us.
Okay, because we're not talking about the boroughs, because they don't have building, at least our borough doesn't have powers for building codes. So basically we're talking about only the cities. Is that correct? Or
currently, yes, currently. And so, you know, in part, if laws change in the future, then we will still have this elongated public process that many people around the state want to have. If you're going to decide locally, if you're going to mandate a sprinkler in a single-family residence, some have suggested that you could have a really quick process without very many of your constituents knowing about it, and this just gives it a higher presence and up to 6 months of public hearings and an opportunity for your constituents to say yes or no.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? We do have a couple people on the line. Or do you want for the sponsor or for a couple of people?
I had one, a couple for the sponsor, but we'll hear from public comment first.
Thanks, Bob. You can be available for a few minutes?
Yes, sir.
Kathy Wasserman. Are there some questions that you might be able to help us with, or are you just here for?
I should probably answer questions. I don't regret this.
Oh, no. Softballs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kathy Wasserman, Alaska Municipal League.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Representative Newman, do you have any questions for Ms. Wasserman? On considering she represents most of the public entities in the state, one
yeah,
way or another?
Sure. We'll give it a try. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. And Kathy, I'll ask you this question. In unorganized areas of the state where if somebody is building a home.
Like Glen Allen, for instance, an unorganized community.
Glen Allen has some facilities, to the chair. Glen Allen has facilities. They have a volunteer fire department and such. And so they can maybe have the ability to talk to each other as a little somewhat organized area within their community. But if you are building a home on the Yukon or just sitting in a river somewhere, Yetna River towards Quetna, and it's an unorganized area of the state, there isn't facilities around there, there's not communities to have municipalities or discussions. Because this would be a state requirement when you build a home to put sprinklers in. How does it affect these people? Who enforces it?
Well, Representative Newman, through the chair, if there is no government entity to require sprinklers, then there's no, I mean, the state is not mandating sprinklers at this point. The state is simply mandating the need for an extra hearing if a municipality would like to adopt the code which requires sprinklers. So nothing is being mandated right now under this legislation other than an extra hearing if the municipality should decide to adopt the code which requires sprinklers. So this will not affect most homeowners, because I really would think that most municipalities would not adopt a code that required sprinklers throughout. So the bone of contention became among the people in support of this bill, and I hope Representative Herron will jump in if I misspeak, and he usually does, that some of the people that were in favor of this bill did not want that to happen and were afraid that it may happen, that a municipality may require sprinklers throughout. The municipalities basically said that probably won't happen, but please don't take the options away from us to make our own decisions on building codes within our own jurisdiction.
And I'm just referring to a letter from the State Home Building Association where it says mandating residential fire sprinkler systems in the construction of all new one- and two-family dwellings could raise significant issues that they're aware of. House Bill 202 and its companion, you know, allows for opportunity of notification and local governments to decide or pursue it and provide a time and opportunity to be educated on the issues. Is there a part of this bill that mandates from the state that fire sprinklers be put into houses or one or
Representative Newman move through home? The chair, no.
So there's nothing in here that says you have to do it.
Through the chair, no, Representative Newman, there's not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further? T. Wilson, Representative T. Wilson.
So what do you think of this bill? Do you think it's necessary?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, we have all agreed in order to put this issue to rest that we would all come to an agreement of something we could all live with. Our contention is, and has always been, that the building codes, along with most of the issues we deal with that have been given to municipal authority, should be under municipal authority. So our reason for jumping in was, as I stated before, we did not think the state should mandate to us what codes we should or could accept. There are some bad codes out there, and I think that most municipalities would get that message through their constituents. So we were opposed to the state saying, oh, this one's out of range for you. So at this point, the bill is something, excuse me, while we're opposed to a mandate, we're willing to say, okay, there's a point where we're gonna give. You know, we're not gonna continue to fight something that we can say, well, this isn't the end of the world for us. And so Representative Herron's office has been very good about working with all of us involved, and there was a group of us. And this, like I said, this has been going on for 2 years now, and we thought it was time to put it to rest.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for Kathy? Thanks again, Kathy.
Thank you.
We also have online for questions only Jeff Tucker from the Alaska Fire Chiefs. We've got Paul Michelson from the State Home Builders Association. If anybody has any question for either of those two gentlemen. And I believe Paul had a few words that he wanted to add. Are you still with us, Paul?
Yes, sir, I am, Mr. Chair. My name is, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Which is the International Code Council, which writes the codes. current bill before this committee, HB 202 version S, that is being presented today, I feel is a compromise of 18 to 24 months worth of work. I personally have been working on this issue for over 10 years nationally. The Alaska State Home Bill Association feels that the bill, as written, it still provides the time to inform the public, yours, your constituents, and educate them into the arguments pertaining to the cost, and I emphasize cost and problems, both good and bad, with the installation of fire sprinkler systems in one- and two-family dwellings. And I emphasize one- and two-family dwellings because that's the code we're talking about right now. Before they can be mandated by a local jurisdiction, deferred or otherwise, in the state of Alaska. Currently, in support of the bill, as stated, we have the Alaska State Home Bill Association, the Realtors Association, the City of Anchorage, and various local home builders associations. This bill today still was, I should say, for the last 2 years, it still remains the Alaska State Home Bill Association's number one prioritized effort, and we strongly request that you pass this bill out of your committee with no amendments and no changes and send it up to the House for a vote so we can put it to rest. I am here for questions. I've been dealing with this issue for a long, long time. Any questions you might have, I'd be glad to answer.
Thanks, Paul. Jeff, I know you're online. Do you have anything to add, or are you just here for questions?
Representative Olson, I was just here to answer any questions if there was any.
Any questions for Chief Tucker? How was Hawaii? That's a question.
It was wonderful.
Well, you're getting off light, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill that hasn't yet? Seeing none, and there's nobody else online, we'll close out the public testimony and bring back the committee for discussion. Representative Newman.
Chair, I have a question for the sponsor. Bob, when I'm looking at your letter to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and it says the original version restricted state agencies and corporations from requiring it. The current, and it goes on to say the current version removes references to state and public corporations. It allows governments to retain their ability to require sprinkler systems, new dwellings. Is there a requirement in statute somewhere that says if municipalities follow these rules, that if they have these public meetings, that they can go ahead and require mandated sprinkler systems, even if the majority of the public said, well, I don't really care for this, but because the municipality followed these rules, that they can enforce it now and make it happen?
Through the chair, to the vice chair, that is the reason for the legislation. Is there is and what I mean there was and until this law is passed, there's a fear that a government could run over your neighbors and mandate something that your neighbors didn't want, and so this does allow for a 6 month opportunity to educate people. So I think it actually helps our constituents rather than hurting them, because it mandates that you have to talk about this for as long as 6 months in your community.
Follow up.
Okay, but then if they follow these rules, go through the 6 months and several hearings, notification requirements, that it seems to me that where we're at now is that municipalities probably could not mandate sprinklers, but if they follow these rules, even if the public says no, we don't like this, that they can still put force these in sprinkler systems.
Well, that's it. Through the chair, to the vice chair, that's the advantages of having a local assembly. There is an opportunity for redress, and people have in the past. As a city manager, I've experienced where politicians have been thrown out for decisions where they thought they knew what was best for their constituents. So there's an opportunity for redress.
I might add, I just saw my community swap out half the city council on a land use issue. Literally half of them. You know, I think the political process works, and I think on something like this, that I would assume that most governing bodies would listen to the will of their people, or
if I could, sir,
people.
If I could, sir, through the chair to the vice chair, is that was the testimony that we heard. I mean, we vetted this in CNRA and had and lots of input, and that was the fear that an aggressive assembly or a bureaucracy that works for an assembly can push through anything, not just this issue, and that's why everyone that's testified is that they felt if you have a thorough and long public process to educate people on this issue, or of course any other issue, but this issue was important to put in state statutes. That's how strident some of the testimony was. Is no, we do need the Alaska legislature to say that you have to have a longer process on this very important issue that affects homes.
Follow up. I'm still trying to get to the answer. I don't think I've got the answer I'm trying to get to, or I've received an answer to the question. And I believe that there's municipalities or communities that have allowed, they have a code compliance board, you know, or a board committee that sets up different regulations on how things are done. And they have the ability or the authority to make those decisions without actually getting up to like the assembly level. And we're having a heck of a time in the Mat-Su right now trying to even get those positions on there. There's a fight because it gets to be so adversarial of who those members are. Because there's members in our community who felt that maybe they were too aggressive one way or another. And even Talis Kohlberg, who's in our new mayor's, I mean, he's went to appoint like 3 or 4 people and they've been turned down by the assembly. But still that group, that planning committee, has the authority to adopt regulations. In those regulations, you know, most people don't go to planning committee meetings, and they could have meetings, but it and they so a planning committee would have the authority to do this, and those are not elected representatives of the community, they're appointed. And I guess my question is, so if they already have, there seems to be a reason for this passing of this in the approval of the state to do this, what I'm thinking or what I'm trying to get out of this is that if the state passes this, that it allows communities to require 1 and 2 family dwellings that they couldn't do up to this point, to be able to require sprinkler systems be installed in there that they didn't have the authority to do before. But if they follow these procedures that are laid out in this piece of legislation, that they can make you do it whether the majority of the community members say they didn't like it or not. And that's my concern. So can this bill, is there a reason why we have to pass this legislation now? And it seems to be that there was, you know, coming to the minds of why this was needed. But to me, it seems that they can't do that at this point. But if they follow, the state passes this legislation that says if you follow these steps, then you can make this a mandate. And, you know, is that true?
Through the chair to the vice chair, in part, you've answered your own question, sir, is that's the whole thing about the piece of, about this proposed legislation, is yes, a municipality could adopt the appropriate code with very little input to in some people's mind that mandates sprinkler systems. This is when there is an effort to mandate sprinkler systems based upon the adoption of a code, the state law says, even though you've adopted the code, you can go in and you have to have yet another public process that explains to your friends and neighbors mandated sprinkler systems are coming. So to the vice chair, you've answered your own question. This does help my constituents and your friends and neighbors and your constituents, and in my mind, and I believe this.
I guess I'm really having trouble with the fact that I'm just not getting why we have to pass legislation to do this. And this just says you have to have, you know, some more public notice on meetings, and that's fine, but and they maybe could have already done that because, again, you know, this is something that's been around several years, as long as I've been here. It's been trying to get through the hopper in one form or another. So obviously that tells me that the state has to pass legislation to allow this to happen, because if it could already happen, they did. Why are we even talking about this today? I mean, if they could already do this, why are we even here talking about this today? And it's good to have further explanation. To me, it says that if the state passes this law, this bill, there's something in here that says, well, we follow these rules, so now we can do it, because we couldn't do it before. Is that true? Is there something, I mean, can they do it now without passage of this?
Yes.
To the chair, to the vice chair, yes, sir. It could be that an assembly, informed or maybe not as informed as they should be, on the recommendation of a bureaucrat, could say this is a good deal for our municipality, and it could go through a relatively brief and not well publicized, as you've articulated, as far as being on a planning commission, which I've done myself, is it could go through with well-meaning people. What this is saying is that some of your constituents that may be home builders, some of your constituents that fire chiefs would want a longer process to educate people about the pros and cons of a mandated sprinkler system. And so to the vice chair, I would encourage your affirmative vote on this, because it is about making sure that people are informed, and it is extending the public process on a very important issue facing Alaska. Maybe not currently, but in the short term, we may be municipalities around the state may be addressing this.
Representative Chenault, followed by Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure I have it in my mind, I know you have it in your mind. Currently, municipalities could enact sprinkler systems on single one or two bedroom or one or two family homes, along with other either three or multifamily. Currently, the law is they could enact that based upon their own provisions.
Through the chair, yes, sir.
And so what this bill does is it adds another layer of protection for community members that basically says that not only if they go through those steps to get to a sprinkler ordinance, that they also have to have another meeting or a series of meetings to talk with the constituents to make sure that they fully understand that by the passage of this, it causes the municipalities to have more meetings to inform the public of what the sprinkler systems are all about.
Through the chair, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a nitpicky question that I just wanted to have out there, since we seem to be the only committee of referral. Section 1 adds a new paragraph, which was subsection 62. I pulled out the statute books, and there appear to already be 64 paragraphs or 63 paragraphs in here. I just want to make sure that before this goes to the floor, that we have the correct number in there, and that on line 5 on page 1, that 62 should really be 62 and not 64 or something else.
Mr. Chairman, any necessary conforming amendments are fine with me.
Any further questions? What's the will of the committee?
Just under committee discussion, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Just with committee discussion, you know, there's just something, a libertarian streak in me or something about, you know, do we really need to pass more laws? Probably not. We can already do this, and probably municipalities could say, before we pass these, we need more meeting hearings. Hopefully they would, to make sure that their communities are informed. You know, I didn't vote for the seatbelt law. I wear my seatbelt. My car is set up so that the headlights are always turned on whenever it's in gear. And I, you know, try and take every precaution to do things like that. You know, I've looked at this and considered putting sprinklers in my home. But there's just something inside me that says, you know, I just kind of have this don't trust state government thing for some reason. And I just am really having trouble trying to follow along the necessity of this. And I'm just having a real hard time with it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments?
I'm ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move CS for House Bill number 202, CNRA 26-LS0776/S, out of committee, with individual recommendations in the attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move on to the floor, and we'll take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Next item on the calendar is House Bill 419. It's a labor and commerce bill. It's commercial fishing and agricultural bank, and carrying the bill will be Jennifer Sinek from my office. But I'm going to, I don't think I've ever been in this position before. The sponsor of the bill in the Senate side is former Representative, now Senator John Coghill. And because he's in the audience, I've asked him to pull up a chair next to Jennifer also. And as a longtime member of this committee, I'm offering the
privilege.
Thank you. You've been on this committee longer than I have, I think. Or were on the committee longer than I have. But please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of committee, Jennifer Sinek, staff to the chair, Rep. Olson. Here to just give a brief introduction to the legislation you have in front of you. That's House Bill 419, an act relating to the board, investigations, and examinations of the Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank and providing for an effective date. This legislation, it does two major things. The first thing is that it eliminates the requirement that a resident farmer be a member of the CFAB board. The Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank has evolved considerably since it began operation in 1980, and the removal of the resident farmer requirement really reflects the changes that CFAB has undergone, and really that the commercial agricultural community in general has undergone since that time. The second thing this legislation does is it requires that CFAB financial records be examined by the Department of Commerce, Division of Banking, and it has to be done at 36-month intervals. So, as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill is with me today, and he's done extensive work on this legislation and the other body, and so when it's appropriate, I'd welcome his expertise. Thank you.
Any questions for Jennifer? Representative Newman. Just
can't help myself. Well, I've learned that sometimes things happen and you don't really realize what happened. So, Senator, I like this that.
For you.
I like that tone, Senator. This is only the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank. Was there any discussion or intent to pull in the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund into this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill, District F, used to be a House of Representatives member, now in the Senate.
And a valued member of this committee.
The answer is no. There was no intention to have anything of this to do with the Revolving Loan Fund.
Follow-up?
Does the Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank fall under the same umbrella or a similar umbrella to that the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund would, in being somewhat of a separate autonomous entity, to whereas it's equal in authority to the, you know, to the Department of Agriculture. But it does not fall under the umbrella of that. It somewhat has its own autonomy. Is that the way this board is set up, our bank is set up also?
Mr. Chairman, the history of CFAB is that it's a creature of statute. It's a private organization. It was authorized to loan based on the value of a commercial fishing license, or permit, I'm sorry. And the agricultural loan fund was set up on a whole different setup. During the time that the CFAB commercial fishing and agricultural bank was set up, Alaska was contemplating its agricultural possibilities. And those possibilities have not grown to the degree that, say, our commercial fishing has. The portfolio that they have is quite small compared in agriculture compared to commercial fishing. So the requirement on this particular board was to have somebody who was a resident farmer. And Mr. Chairman, I'll read the definition of that resident farmer, and I'll show you how this is different than the division's revolving loan fund, hopefully, Mr. Chairman. The resident farmer means a person who is a resident of the state and who is engaged in commercial agricultural in the state. So that was what was contemplated in this, is that it would be a private organization, that it be a co-op based on lending with specific issues of fishing and agriculture. So the agricultural revolving loan fund was an infusion of cash that a department managed, and was quite different than a private organization like commercial fishing or agricultural bank. So very, very different systems. But the requirement for agriculture was with the anticipation that Alaska would have a vibrant agricultural industry. The requirement in this bill to take, proposal in this bill to take the requirement out is kind of a recognition of the fact that the resident farmer is a requirement that somebody who is engaged in commercial agriculture. The pool is getting very small, and the requirements then become more and more difficult to fulfill. I think that the agriculture would still be in its operational mandate, and so this is one way of anchoring that mandate, but it is not the only way to enforce the agricultural loan portfolio. So the revolving loan fund that you were talking about, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Newman, has to do with, excuse me, I just got interrupted, how the department manages agricultural investment in Alaska, whereas this has an investment strategy based on private decisions. The agricultural loan fund has been quite often more for policy decisions the state is involved in. And I just got a whole bunch of information that it would take me a few minutes to decipher, so I'll take a look at this. Best I can answer that question, Mr. Chairman.
I think my question was, is it you know, is the agriculture revolving loan fund has its autonomous. It doesn't fall under the state government, doesn't run it. It appoints a board that runs it. So this commercial fishing agricultural bank, I'm assuming, is it has its own, you know, it's autonomous too.
Yes.
in how it's.
Mr. Chairman, this is a totally separate private
doesn't have government
organization. It that's when you get to the other portion of this bill, and that is to have the Division of Banking and Securities give an audit on it. They have an annual audit that is mandated by a private organization. This would allow the government to look at it in intervals of 36 months. A very, very different creature than your revolving loan fund, and I don't think should be in any way confused. The only thing they have in common is the agricultural needs.
And I might add, Representative Newman, we have a representative of CFAB in the room who will be testifying in a few minutes. they can probably answer your questions.
That's fine. My concern was just that we don't try and roll Arliff into this is all, and I'm assuming that that's not your intent. Or it's the House Labor and Commerce Committee bill now, so I'm assuming it's not the chair's intent to do that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
Sure. I'm trying to figure out why farmers don't want to be a part of this. I mean, I understand it's been a hard time being able to fill this position. Is there a reason for that?
It's not a matter of want. It's a matter of ability. You have so many people in Alaska, only so many handful of people who are actually commercial agricultural farmers. And so, and their loan portfolio is so small that to demand that they be on the board as a position is just getting harder and harder to fill. So, and beyond that, I will have to let the CFAB director talk about that. But to the best of my knowledge, that is the cleanest answer I can give.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, I guess we'll hear from CFAB at this point in time. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to see you.
And Mr. Chairman, if the committee desires, at the end, I could just walk through section by section of the bill and show how it all works, if you so wish.
That looks pretty simple. Thanks again, Senator. Leela Klinger, am I close?
Klinger, yes.
Welcome.
I don't know if you, for the record, the name is Leela Klingert, and I'm the CEO of Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, or CFAB as we're called. I don't know if you want to go directly to questions or if you want to hear my testimony.
How about directly to questions? Okay. Representative Newman probably has at least, I'm guessing, three.
My question is, are you having a good day today in the legislature?
It's always a good day when I'm in Juneau and in legislature.
Do you think that the chair of Labor and Commerce is a great guy?
Of course.
And he has a nice tie. There's my three.
You're not under oath.
Well, that was easy.
Well, that was painless. Well,
I want to hear a testimony, though. I'm just waiting to hear.
Representative Wilson.
Yeah, true chair. I just want to hear a testimony. She said she had some, so I thought she would enlighten some of us newer members.
Okay. All right. when CFAB was created by the legislature in 1979 and 1980, there was considerable emphasis on the development of agriculture in Alaska, and there was hope that CFAB would be a significant player in the financing of that development. While CFAB has in fact made many agricultural loans and continues to offer agricultural loans today, we have made very few new loans in the past 10 years. Because of this, CFAB's pool of eligible farmer members from which a farmer director candidate can be recruited has dwindled. This has resulted in increasing pressures on the individuals involved, on CFAB's other directors, and on CFAB's efforts to maintain its viability and to properly serve its various constituencies. Despite the logical and well-intended requirement of the past, it has now become critical for CFAB's members to reach into the broad pool of its total membership in order to maintain the highest level of competence in its governing body. With regard to our request for examination, it admittedly may seem odd that a financial institution would seek some new levels of oversight and/or potential criticisms, especially where it will involve new and uncontrollable financial costs. CFAB represents a collection of diverse fiduciary responsibilities. It borrows and lends money, and it operates as a cooperative corporation. Therefore, it has a fiduciary obligation to those who have borrowed in the past, those who are borrowing today, and those who will borrow in the future. It also has a fiduciary responsibility to the state of Alaska. First, because it was a financial investment of the state, since repaid, and second, because CFAB is the only private enterprise with the authority to encumber a commercial fishing limited entry permit with a consensual lien. CFAB's board of directors, management, and staff members have always been sensitive to those diverse fiduciary responsibilities. It is true that CFAB is subject to an annual financial audit by a professional firm, but such audits are focused primarily on quantitative values and accounting protocols. Only peripherally do they touch upon the qualitative aspects of lending, policies, practices, and results. The state's bank examiners, however, are trained in analytical and evaluative procedures, and they are prepared to express a judgment as to the likelihood of a loan's repayment in full. In addition, the examiners have access to the results and experiences of numerous other financial institutions and can establish norms or guidelines by which CFAB's effectiveness can be measured. So in total, CFAB's board of directors and management are enthusiastic in their support of the measure at hand. And thank you for your time.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. So I'm just making sure I understand, you have to actually have a loan as a farmer to be on this board.
Yes, through the chair, that's what entitled you to membership.
Thank you.
You got off light?
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time and the opportunity.
Is there anybody online that signed up to testify? Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Tyson? Nope. I think we'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for committee discussion and whatever. Representative Wilson.
Would you like to move the bill, sir?
Certainly.
Okay, I move House Bill number 419-26-LS1615/A with individual recommendations, and I don't believe there's a fiscal. Oh, and fiscal note, there was.
Fiscal notes?
And fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition to the bill will move out of committee. And thanks again, Senator and Wardiva.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee. Thank you, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had a fiscal note. My gosh.
Yeah, I've had one.
Oh. And with that, we'll adjourn.